You're listening to the Wool Academy podcast. This is episode number 19.
Hello and welcome. My name is Elizabeth Van Delden, and once a week we talk to an industry expert from the wool industry supply chain, from farm to fashion and beyond, delivering strategies and insights to be successful in wool and showcasing those beautiful stories wool has to tell.
Today on the show, we welcome Kjersti Kviset, who runs a product design consultancy called 2025 Design. In her consulting company, she's doing life cycle thinking in design and development of materials and products, as well as sustainability assessment and strategies. She has a diploma in product design and 15 years of experience in the Norwegian furniture industry, of which 10 as an environmental manager. Kjersti's competences lie in eco-management, life cycle development, and cradle-to-cradle. These all are related to design, product development, and manufacturing. Welcome, Kjersti. I'm excited to be talking to you today. How are you?
Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
I'm fine, thank you. The sun is shining in Oslo, so I feel quite lucky.
Yeah, and you have sun for how many hours now during the day?
Oh, the days are getting pretty much longer and lighter. Mm-hmm. So we have it feels like a normal day with light from around 7 till 6 in the afternoon.
That sounds pretty normal. Well, let's just get started by you telling us a little bit about yourself and also your company.
Yeah, I'm a born Norwegian, a farmer's daughter from the middle of Norway. And after school, I left for Germany to stay a couple of years to find out what I was going to do with my life. And I ended up studying product design in Germany and had a dream of becoming a very famous furniture designer. I was supposed to live in New York, being only dressed in black and become very famous. I think that was the typical dream in the 80s for all of us who studied design. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to Norway, and I just was supposed to work in a production company, in a furniture company for a year to learn how to manufacture furniture and how to do product development. So that was my beginning of a career that turned out to become something totally different, which I'm very happy about today. Because after a couple of years of having fun doing product development and learning a lot with working with designers and working in the manufacturing, I found out that all these environmental issues that started to come up in the beginning of the 90s, they were totally interesting, and I found a spark of passion. It started actually with something so simple as the German packaging legislation, that we had to take back our packaging materials or pay for them. And that was the beginning of my the new direction in my life, becoming a sustainability manager. And this company, this furniture company, Haug, is one of the biggest in Europe at that time already, and very concerned about ergonomics and health and giving people a better place to sit and making the world a better place to sit. This company was very open to changes and open to new and wild ideas. We had the most crazy product design, but we also had a culture for, if you suggested a new idea like working with sustainability, then the upper management would say, "Oh, that's nice. You can do that, but please be sure you make it good." So we were the first company in Norway starting to work with all these environmental issues really seriously and going for the certifications like ISO and EMAS, and we were front runners. And I had the possibility to build up these topics within the company, but I stayed in the product development department. I stayed designer in R&D, and I think that is the it's a really important thing to start sustainability work with your product and with your design. There's so much to do. So instead of having a one-year career in product development, I ended up staying 14 years, and 10 of them as the global environmental manager for this company. So I learned a lot about sustainability. I learned a lot about all the topics and did all the topics related to that, from waste management, annual reporting, to chemical management, training of employees, supply chain management, etc., in addition to the product-related things. And it was also that time when the Cradle to Cradle was founded by McDonough and Braungart in the early 90s. And I had already done some work on recycling and reusing recycled bottle caps from Coca-Cola bottles into our office chairs. And I found that the Cradle to Cradle guys was very inspiring, a very inspiring concept, and the true and only way to go to do that kind of thinking. So when I quit my job at Haag after 14 years, I first went into academia and did teaching on eco-design for a couple of years. I also had a bunch of kids during that time, so I needed to step down and work a little bit less. And then some 10 years ago, I started 2025 Design together with another designer in Norway, focusing on cradle-to-cradle thinking and sustainability and wanting to help the Norwegian industry to build up that kind of competence.
So I understand that you actually created probably your own position as environmental manager and were probably one of the first ones to have such a title in the early 90s.
Yeah, in Norway for sure, that was not very typical. Of course, bigger companies, bigger industry had their environmental managers, but they were typically also the quality managers. Mm-hmm. And typically engineers or economists, different, coming from a different background, having a different position, and none of them were really very interested in products. Right. So my position was very special, coming from the product side.
Mm-hmm. And that leads us maybe already to the next question. So give us a little bit an introduction to what does life cycle design mean exactly?
Life cycle design for me is thinking about the complete life cycle of a product, and not even only the first life cycle, but also the next and the next and the next. Planning for as many life cycles as possible for materials. Of course, a product will live a certain life, and hopefully a long one, but a material can live for many, many life cycles. And this is what I learned by working together with Cradle to Cradle company and the people. I was representing them for some years in Scandinavia. And planning for many life cycles, or what I as a designer would say is design for reincarnation, is what we are doing when we are talking about design for life cycles.
So maybe for those people who are not that familiar with Cradle to Cradle, so normally the term would be cradle to grave, which just means you dispose of a product once it has come to its first end of life. But with Cradle to Cradle, it's exactly what you just said, that you give it a second life or even a third life, and already plan that into your design when you design the first product. Is
yes.
That how I understand it correctly? Okay, great. And why
that is correct.
Yeah. And why is it so important and relevant to think about the different lifetimes of a product?
It's really important because we have limited resources on this planet. That's one thing that we probably most of us are aware of, that we need to take more care of the resources and use them for a longer time before we dispose of them, and hopefully not dispose at any time. And in the design for life cycle, which is my term of how to do cradle to cradle, is we think about materials going into biological cycles or technical cycles. Some materials, natural fibers, materials that come from nature, like wool, they can also go back to nature, be biodegraded or composted. Other materials, like the synthetic ones, plastics, metals, they must go back to industry to be technically recycled. So that's the basic principles. But it also belongs to the story that we need a shift from the fossil fuel energy to solar-driven energy. And solar energy might come directly from the sun or through wind or waves. And it's also a very, very important focus is to keep materials clean or not to add any toxic dye stuff or additives that will interfere with the process of recycling or giving things back to nature. So if you have a wool garment or a wool textile that you want to compost or put back to nature, then you must be sure that all the dye stuff and all the finishing is so clean that it is not harmful to nature or to humans.
And you just mentioned wool as an example, but can you also maybe mention a very particular product or a company who's using the life cycle design concept and kind of explain how, you know, maybe the different product stages that were already planned when the product was developed to make it a little bit more concrete?
I have one favorite brand, which is a American company making detergents and soaps. It is called Method, and they are based out of California. There were two young guys living together in San Francisco as students, and they really didn't like to clean up their place. It was a mess all the time. And one of them studied chemistry. And so he set out to say, we have to change something in our behavior. We need to clean up our apartment a little bit more. And why are all these detergents and all these soaps so ugly and they smell so bad? So he started on a quest to develop very clean soaps and detergent, natural stuff only. And in addition, they wanted to make the most elegant packaging for these soaps. So they are using only clean and safe ingredients in their products, and they are using recycled bottles, water bottles, PET, for their packaging. They are using famous designers to design beautiful bottles and boxes, and to make this a really elegant and attractive and inspiring range of products for your home. So that is a very good example of that is design for life cycle thinking applies to all ingredients, and you need to start thinking from what raw material comes in and what kind of systems you are making.
Okay, thank you for that example. And yeah, I've also seen Method already here in Germany in the drugstore. So for sure, they've come a long way to. And I guess that's what people like nowadays, the consumer, to have these products that are safe for the environment.
Yeah, and I think it's what is very important when you work with design for life cycles, it's to get away from this impression of alternative stuff, or, you know, Birkenstock shoes used to be only the alternative people going with their bikes and their violet scarves. So we are finished with that. It's about making the most attractive, cool, sexy, elegant, nice product. And by the way, it's also designed for many life cycles.
And what kind of companies do you see are being interested now in this life cycle design today? And how do you think the topic will, or this kind of thinking will develop in the future?
Today, we see actually it's starting to grow. The last couple of years, it has shifted from not being interested. And especially in Norway, industry and business has had very little interest in the sustainability and design for life cycle thinking. Now it's on everyone's lips. It's under the terminology of a circular economy, because the cradle-to-cradle guys started something that has shifted into a better term of a circular economy, which has been adapted by the European Union. Most countries, at least in Europe, are talking about this and how to make the shift in society, in business and industry into circular economy. So the design for life cycle is just another term in the same way as circular economy. Especially I see a change in the textile and apparel industry, that they are becoming more and more interested in becoming circular. If you look at H&M, for instance, which is a famous brand, they have claimed that they want to become 100% circular, and they work together with the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, which is one of the main players in Europe, or globally even, on circular economy, trying to make this happen. And how they will do their design and design for life cycles is a basis for how a business can become circular in all and everything they do.
Oh yeah, so I what I hear and find very interesting is that it started as a concept that individual companies did, but now, as you said, the European Union is already heavily involved in this area under circular economy. It seems that, you know, it got so much traction now that also the political side is really deeply looking into this. So for sure that's a concept to be observed and yeah, worked with in the future. Now, I obviously, this is the Wool Academy podcast, so we also need to talk about wool, and I know that you are a big fan of wool. And let me, like, tell me, is there a special relationship between wool and life cycle design?
First of all, I'm a big fan of wool. Probably one of the biggest. I love working with wool, and I'm fortunate to be able to do that. So, wool is a very good fiber and material in relation to design for life cycle because of all its good features. It comes from nature. It is renewable every year, and in the end, it's also biodegradable. But when we get back to what I said earlier, is we must make sure that what we put on the wool or into the wool when we are making garments or textiles is safe and clean for both human and nature. But wool is really, really one of the best materials when it comes to design for life cycles. Can be recycled technically into new fibers, but as I said, also biodegradable.
And what kind of advice would you give to a designer who wants to look more into life cycle design and working with wool? Where should they start?
It's a good idea to start with the overview of what are we already doing or making? What kind of products do we have? Or if you start with something new, is to say, what do we want to create? What is it that we are making, and for whom and why is this product really needed? Because that is also an important question today when we have overload and too much volumes of unused garments, or garments that are living just a very, very short life and end up in either landfills or exported to other countries. So that's the main problem in the apparel industry, that we have too much. So start with the basic question now: does the world really need our products? And if you have a good reason to make what you are planning to do, then start with asking the question, so where does my raw material come from? And choosing quality in order to make your product perform as you plan it to, and in order to live a long life. And after a long and good life, as let's say a sweater or something, it can be, you must plan it to be able to be recycled either into a new fiber, a new product, or designed to go back to nature, to nurture nature. Because, you know, wool is a wonderful nutrition for the soil. So it would be good to compost or biodegrade more wool, but we have to make sure it's totally clean.
Okay, I think that's some really good advice. Thank you for sharing that. And another area that I know you're very active in, because you're this expert on life cycle design and environmental topics, you're also very much engaged in the Sustainable Apparel Coalition. That's a coalition of how many retailers and brands? Is it already 70% of the fashion industry who are engaged in developing a HIGA index? And can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm fortunate to work within the SIC on behalf of the wool. And the SIC is counts for, I think, about 40% of the global textile industry.
Okay, not only garb. Too high. Okay, 40%.
Yeah. But anyway, that's a huge amount, and it has now nearly 200 members, basically brands within sports apparel, fashion, and also retail, and it's academia, it's organizations, and the IWTO. And in this work, I have engaged because it's, as I see, is dependent on members engaging in task groups, in working groups to develop the HIG index, which is the set of tool to measure performance in industry. And this set of tool, which is named HIG index, is both for manufacturing, environmental and labor aspects in the manufacturing and value chain. It has one set of modules for the brands, the brand policy and strategies. What do you set out as targets for you as a brand? How you deal with logistics, packaging, and concepts for product development, etc. And then there is one module for product development, and that is where I have engaged most because that's my competence. And it's just launched the DDM module, the design and development module, which is an internal tool for designers and product developers to use during the design process and to assist them in and guide in making better choices for your products. And it's considering the complete life cycle from material choice through use, end of life, and that's basically it. And the material component, the material database is a huge database called MSI, the Material Sustainability Index, originally developed by Nike and now shared with the industry and further developed. Where also IWTO with Beverly Henry has engaged a lot in giving data from the wool and improving the data for wool into this material database, which is a very important and life cycle assessment based database and set of data for this tool. And in within a couple of years, there will also be released a product environmental footprint tool, so where you can actually calculate the footprint of your garment, and this will be a shared tool. So the objective is that the whole industry and all members of the SSC share the same tools, and so it will be easy to compare the scores or the performance that different brands and different products have.
Okay, it sounds like a really big project, but with also a very important vision. But tell us a little bit, what are the discussions around wool and the HIG index? What are you working on there in particular?
Well, my particular focus has been during the last 3 years to try to implement or at least discuss all the qualitative aspects of wool, because the HIG index and the material database is based upon life cycle assessment data. And as many of you know, wool comes out quite low in scores when it comes to life cycle assessment for different reasons. And we wanted to improve the scores and improve the wool's reputation by talking about, by communicating and adding the qualitative data about wool, because wool does not need to be washed that much as other fabrics. It has this natural fire retardancy and so many features and so many good aspects of wool that are not captured within a life cycle assessment. And having discussions about all the qualitative aspects, the good sides of a material, and actually all materials have some good sides and some bad sides. And this has not been a very, maybe not yet a very successful task, because the Higg Index is totally based upon verifiable data like life cycle assessments. So there is still a lot of work to be done to improve wool's credibility as a very sustainable fiber.
So if I understand correctly, is that wool kind of is such a special fiber because it has all these properties and it's a natural fiber that it somehow doesn't fit properly into the system of the Higg Index, which probably works quite well for synthetics who always are the same produced, but with wool being a natural product, it's difficult to get it to kind of fit it or make it fit into that index that it gives the results that it deserves, so to say.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think it's so unfair that we are putting materials into this only these life cycle assessment boxes, even though it is really important that things are verifiable and you can document your claims. So it's a dilemma, actually. But I really think we need to discuss more about the qualitative aspects coming from natural materials and include them in one way or another. And at least there's a lot to do in communicating that and teaching people, teaching designers, teaching brands about wool and its very nice properties.
Yeah, and that was also something we discussed in the podcast with Dr. Beverly Henry. You mentioned her before as well, who also explained us more about life cycle assessment and also that there will be now lots of work done on how are consumers using wool products, how long do they last, how often do they wash them, etc., because these are those qualitative features that wool have that somehow also need to be able to be measured so that they can go into these kind of indexes like Higg Index. So yeah. Anyone who's interested in learning more about that and hasn't listened to the podcast episode, that was podcast number 15. Well, before we close, Kirsty, it was really nice talking to you and really interesting. But how can companies who are interested to learn more about life cycle design get in touch with you?
Oh, they can get in touch with me via email or phone or any kind of media available. Go to my website, www.2025design.no. I'm based in Oslo, but I'm very flexible and mobile. And contact me on that. And it would be lovely to hear from people who want to know more about what design for life cycles could mean to their products or their company.
Yeah, well, for sure we'll link to your website in the show notes so people can easily find you. And yeah, once again, so valuable information that you provided today. I really appreciate it, and I hope you have a good rest of the day.
Yeah, thank you, Elizabeth. It was lovely talking to you too, and have a really good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode with Kirsty Kvisset. If you want to find out more about Kirsty and her business Design 2025, you can visit the show notes at elizabethvandelden.com/019. Here you can find all the links mentioned in the episode. Once again, visit elizabethvandelden.com/019. Don't want to miss out on any of the future episodes?
then subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and also like us on Facebook at Elizabeth Van Delden. Thank you, and see you next week.